Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Thursday, August 6th. I'm Sarith Hawk. The intestinal infection known as cyclosporiasis is growing at an alarming rate. But how concerned should we be in California?
We've not seen an increase in cases here in California that suggests that we have received any of the contaminated food products.
We speak to an official with the California Department of Public Health about food safety precautions everyone should take and what to know on your next visit to a restaurant or grocery store. But first, these headlines. State lawmakers will vote on a plan to intervene in a proposed transportation tax in Fresno County. Assemblymember Esmeralda Soria says that her bill to send the tax issue to local voters this fall will go up for a vote on the Senate floor today. The bill would block an effort by Fresno County supervisors to delay a public vote on the measure until 2028. State Senator Ana Caballero joined Soria to create the bill.
If it's signed by the governor, and we are hopeful that it will be, then it ends up on the ballot in November. And with that real short window, all of these folks that are here today will have the opportunity to convince the residents to vote for the bill.
Caballero says 11 Fresno County mayors testified in support of AB 1923. The deadline to get on the ballot is this Friday. Today, Fresno County Supervisor Gary Bredefeld will hold a news conference about possible litigation over the matter. Despite the heat, Bakersfield leaders gathered this week to break ground on a new senior center and affordable housing development. Renee Bartlett-Weber with our news partner, The Intersection, has the story.
Seniors and community leaders gathered under the shade Tuesday to celebrate the construction of 35 new apartments for low-income seniors. The project grew out of the state's Transformative Climate Communities Grant, a program created for neighborhoods heavily impacted by pollution. The area faces freight traffic and extreme heat, with little tree shade. Residents voiced a clear need.
Our project floated to the top as number one as far as what the community wanted, not the city of Bakersfield.
That's Lily Parker, executive director of the Senior Center. Funding the $27 million facility is a patchwork of 10 public and private sources. The largest portion came from federal funds secured by Congressman David Valadeo. Construction on the apartments is projected to finish by March 2028. In Bakersfield, I'm Renee Bartlett-Weber.
A court ruling this week has ended a preliminary injunction over fire services in the city of Avenal. That means Kings County is no longer required to provide fire services to the city. It allows Avenal to continue with its efforts to create its own fire department. The legal dispute began at the end of March and kicked off a political fight that led to a recall of several Avenal elected officials. The philanthropist Mackenzie Scott has donated nearly $500 million to school districts and universities in California since 2021. About one-fifth of that money went to schools and colleges in the San Joaquin Valley, according to a new analysis from education news outlet EdSource. Scott gave a total of $58 million to UC Merced since 2021. Fresno Unified, meanwhile, has received $20 million since 2022. Scott has said the focus of her donations is to help underserved communities.
KVPR is now 100% community funded. A great way to show your support for public radio and this station is to purchase a $100 ticket for KVPR's $10,000 drawing. Purchase tickets now at kvpr.org/10k.
And now to our main story. A parasitic infection known as cyclosporiasis has spread fast in an outbreak now hitting 15 states. The number of people sickened has tripled in just the last month to more than 6,000. The outbreak is believed to be tied to contaminated lettuce supplied by a Taylor Farms processing facility in Mexico.
More cases of a gut-wrenching illness that is caused by a parasite that may be found in raw vegetables and fruit.
Health officials in Michigan reported the first deaths in the U.S. related to a cyclosporiasis outbreak.
The main complication of this type of infection, it looks often like severe food poisoning, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea.
California is not affected by the multi-state outbreak, mainly centered in the Midwest and East Coast. But all of this has caused heightened concerns over food safety. I spoke to Dr. Eric Sergienko, the chief for the Division of Communicable Disease Control at the California Department of Public Health. We covered what consumers should know for their next visit to a restaurant or grocery store and who's most at risk for this infection.
When we consider cyclosporiasis, it doesn't really transmit person to person. It's you have to ingest it, incubate, and then you shed it again, and then it gets on food or other substances and then continues to spread. So once you've ingested it, it takes a week or two to incubate, and then after that, you develop watery diarrhea, you don't have an appetite, you start losing weight because you have the diarrhea. One thing is intense stomach cramping and pain, bloating associated with that, nausea and fatigue, and then occasionally vomiting or a low-grade fever. And so the interesting thing with cyclosporiasis, because it's a parasite, is that symptoms can relapse and then recur at days to weeks if it doesn't get treated. At the same time, you can have some folks who have become infected and don't demonstrate any symptoms at all.
Right. Yeah, we heard about some hospitalizations, about 100 so far from the CDC. In fact, Michigan just reported two cyclosporiasis-related deaths from people with underlying health conditions. What really determines how severely someone experiences symptoms?
I think that's one thing that you brought up that's really key is the underlying condition. So extremes of age, either younger or older, or people who are immunocompromised, are more at risk for having severe disease. And so people that have a fairly robust immune system may be able to hold off, demonstrating symptoms at all. And so when we look at the deaths that occurred in Michigan, and I don't have all the details, what the state mentioned is that it was an immunocompromised person with underlying conditions. So not knowing those specifics, it's probably someone who would not do well with losing body volume, not able to keep up and stay hydrated. And so that's likely what impacted them most. And so maintaining that hydration status is good for anyone who has any diarrheal diseases. It's just maintaining or rehydration as best possible.
Now, about 3 weeks ago, your department issued a news release that said California is not among the states seeing the increase in cases. Right now, the CDC says it's about 9 states, but we're seeing reports from the Washington Post that say there could be an expansion to another 6 states, totaling 15. So just wondering, in the 3 weeks since we got that message from the department, has anything changed for California?
No, as we continue to monitor the outbreak in the Midwest and Eastern states, and as we continue to monitor our own cases, we've not seen an increase in cases here in California that suggests that we have received any of the contaminated food products that have been identified in that outbreak. And so at this point in time, we're not one of those associated states, though I will say that we have identified at least 2 people that had traveled to one of the affected states and had consumed food from one of the identified locations. But again, that represents cases associated with the outbreak that was returning travelers to California rather than an outbreak occurring in California. So again, our food supply here is safe.
Yeah, and I want to get to that. But just looking at the number of cases that you are monitoring, how do you determine or gauge that it reaches a level that's concerning? Are there certain numbers or characteristics that would qualify as a threshold?
Yeah, it's not so much a numbers thing as it is recognizing that the cases that we do see are either connected in terms of they consumed the same food, or as we do sequencing of the genes on the specimens that we get of the cyclospora, are they genetically linked? And so if we can link someone through either a food product or through genetic testing of the cyclospora, then we can say, okay, these are linked cases. This may represent an outbreak. And then we have to do the what's called a trace back to see if those common food items lead to a single producer that leads to a single product that we can say puts a person at risk. And so that's kind of what we're doing for any foodborne outbreak, and really commend the work that was done by the state of Michigan in identifying and doing their investigation and doing their tracebacks, because every time you have a cyclospora case or another case of gastrointestinal disease like it, you have to do a very detailed, lengthy interview of each of those cases to see what the foods they ate, where they ate, when they ate. And then the challenge with cyclospora, as I mentioned earlier, it has this 1 to 2 week incubation period. So not only does that person need to remember what foods they ate and where they ate them, they have to remember it for 14, 21 days ago. And so asking you, do you remember what you had for lunch two weeks ago?
Yeah, that's tough.
It's tough. And so, you know, really life has gotten our ability to do tracing of product has gotten easier with the advances in the ability to do genetic sequencing around parasites, around food products.
Now, federal health officials have linked these infections to iceberg lettuce from Taylor Farms de Mexico. Taylor Farms does have operations in Salinas here in California. So can you talk about why those are not connected and just the safety of our food supply?
For more details on the federal response, I would direct you towards the FDA, towards the CDC, for those sort of specifics. But what I do know is, yeah, the production of the products, the iceberg lettuce, were grown in Mexico and then shipped in that distribution pattern that we're seeing of the impacted states. But for the farms in California, that's a distribution pattern that's different than what you're seeing for the Taylor Farms to Mexico.
Got it. So when people are going to the grocery store, you're saying they should feel confident in picking up their salads and raw foods? Or are there certain precautions people should be thinking about when going to the grocery store?
So for this particular outbreak, no, not really. But in general, we want people to, you know, when you're handling food in general, you want good hand hygiene. So you want to wash your hands before and after you're handling produce, and you want to wash all your fruits and vegetables thoroughly. You can scrub firm produce. And if you're concerned, if you have, you know, underlying medical conditions that put you at more risk for a gastrointestinal disease, consider cooking the food. But again, what I would emphasize is these are normal day-to-day precautions that I would encourage for everybody, not just in the face of this outbreak that's occurring in the Midwest and in the eastern states, but just day-to-day good practice.
Yeah. And when, you know, you're going to the store and you're picking out your own produce, that's one thing. But what about dining out? And, you know, you're not sure of where the food is coming from. How do you sort of protect yourself when you're, you know, I've been to restaurants with friends now who, and they're afraid to order salads. I mean, is that something that we should be thinking about?
Again, looking at the distribution that occurs in this outbreak, no. Because again, most of this food that we source in restaurants, in grocery stores, the leafy greens at this time of the year are coming local, not locally, but within the state.
Got it. Well, a lot to think about and just, you know, to stay safe during this time. So we appreciate your time so much, Dr. Eric Sergienko, the chief for the Division of Communicable Disease Control at the California Department of Public Health.
Thank you so much.
And that's today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR. I'm Sarith Hawk. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
The fatal shooting of a teenager at a protest in Seattle has gone unsolved for 6 years.
This is open in your face. How are there no answers?
Our investigation has uncovered new evidence and witnesses who say they've never talked to police.
Did police ever call you?
Not once.
Listen to We Keep Us Safe, a new true crime series on the Embedded podcast from NPR.